or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
When I get home tonight, I'm going to be submitting an article to the most prestigious publications I can. They may all reject it, but it's designed to be posted on Father's Day or just a few days before about men and work. And what better opportunity to get feedback than to get you, my dear KELW listeners, a shot at this essay that I've written. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do something I've never done before. This is actually going to take about 10, maybe even 15 minutes to read, but I think you'll find it interesting, stimulating, and I welcome your input. So, and also to kick things off, because it's about men, and I guess it could be called the case for men on Father's Day, specifically focusing on work, I thought it would be important to have a woman here to specifically kick off the response, and who better than my frequent co-conspirator on the show, Dr. Barbara Nimco, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools. Barbara, thank you very much for listening to this.
Good morning.
Hi.
I've probably heard lots of it before, but it'll be interesting to hear it all in one place.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So here we go, Barb, and here we go, dear listeners. And it is fairly long, so if you do have a comment, I might ask, and if you're interested in providing input, you might want to take a couple of notes so that when we're done in 10 or 15 minutes, then Barbara is going to give her reactions after I'm finished, but then we will go to the phones and ask you. You'll have your reactions near at hand. Anyway, a case for men, especially in the workplace. Imagine a world without men. You wouldn't be able to hear this. No radio. If you're listening on the computer, no computer. No computer screen. No Google. Probably no chair that you're sitting on. No air conditioning or heater that's making you comfortable in your room. For that matter, you probably wouldn't have a room. That room and its materials were likely developed and installed by men from the subfloor to the roof. So is the penicillin that cured your venereal disease, the birth control pill that kept you from getting pregnant, the refrigerator that kept your baby's formula and your food fresh, the car that gives you freedom of movement, or the mass transit that environmentalists prefer. Beyond necessities, men have given us information transmitters from the printing press to the television, to the aforementioned Google, to the iPhone. Men have given us wisdom from Plato and Plutarch to Kant and Kafka, Victor Davis Hanson to Christopher Hitchens, and presidents from George Washington to Barack Obama. And lest all work and no play make dull boys and girls, men have given us entertainment, from Shakespeare to Spielberg, Rembrandt to Rothko, Beethoven to Basie to the Beatles to Bono. You couldn't even defecate without men. What percentage of toilets would you imagine were built, installed, and repaired, not to mention sewer lines cleaned out, by women? No less than lesbian feminist Camille Paglia wrote, quote, "If civilization had been left in female hands, we would still be living in grass huts," end quote. Yet over the past 50 years, as a horrible side effect of the appropriate increase in women's opportunities, there has been an accelerating effort, a successful effort, to diminish men. And it's working, not only to their detriment, but to society's. Indeed, the oppressed have become the oppressor. Just a couple of obvious manifestations of that acceleration. President Clinton's press secretary Dee Dee Myers' book was entitled Why Women Should Rule the World. And New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd's bestseller was titled Are Men Necessary? Even more telling is the cover story for a Father's Day edition of The Atlantic. Its title, The End of Men. Its core contention, men are better suited for the Neanderthal era, or at least the Industrial Revolution age, when success usually depended on brawn and individual testosterone, quote-unquote, poisoned competition. That cover story argues that today's success requires the woman's touch, collaborativeness, emotional intelligence, reflectiveness. And to think, all the aforementioned discoveries were created by butt-scratching, hyperactive, cognitively crippled troglodytes without benefit of women's wonders. The problem is that the male bashing dispirits not only the intellectual men who read publications such as The Atlantic. Average men and boys are force-fed a diet ever more larded with images of boorish, sleazy, idiotic men shown the way by wise women. We are in our seventh decade of man as oaf media, from Ralph Cramden to Homer Simpson. Even in the majority male Super Bowl audience, commercials constantly present man as cretin, hopelessly impotent men who are literally in the doghouse, cowed by their woman master. By the way, I include in the online version of this essay, I have a link to the Super Bowl commercial that shows literally that. Or the men are viewed as, or portrayed as, mumbling supplicants, begging for a woman judge's charity. And lest you think I'm cherry-picking, just turn on your TV. Watch commercials. How often is the man portrayed as superior to the woman? How about the vice versa? 25 years ago, when I began helping people choose their career, both sexes were equally optimistic about their future. Today, except at the C-level, that's CEO, CTO, etc., at which fewer women are willing to work the 60-plus hour weeks, take the years to get technical enough, and to move their families across the country to get the necessary promotions, most of my female clients correctly believe the world is their oyster, and my male clients are disproportionately despondent and or angry. And they're not going to college. In 1960, the male-to-female ratio of college degree holders was 61 to 39. Today, in an era in which a college degree has become a virtual necessity, a mere hunting license for most decent employment, the ratio has completely reversed. It is 60% women and 40% men getting college degrees. And yet, despite this serious underrepresentation of men, many scholarships are set aside for women, few for men. The curriculum accentuates women's accomplishments, men's failings. Student groups are funded to encourage women, for example, future businesswoman groups, far fewer for men. Thus, it is not surprising that men's unemployment rate is now much higher than women's. As you know, so many young men are often back living with their parents, stoned, and or playing video games, while the young women are launching their careers. But what about the constantly trumpeted statistic that women earn just 77 cents for every dollar that men earn? That statistic implies that for the same work, women are paid less. But there are fair reasons why men are, on average, paid more. For example, among people claiming to work full-time, men work an average of 6 hours a week longer, and so are paid more. 92% of workplace deaths military deaths, and severe workplace injuries such as amputations and black lung disease occur to men, so they get paid more for choosing dangerous work. There are countless other examples. The lack of sexism in pay is documented by a rich research literature, and the online version of this that I'm going to be submitting has links to reviews of the literature in the New York Times, in the Wall Street Journal, in an industry publication called Compensation Cafe, and from City Journal. And by the way, dear listeners, if you would like me to email you all of those links, I am happy to do it. Just email me at mnemko, that's M-N-E-M-K-O, at comcast.net. And yet the media chooses to ignore all of that research in favor of trumpeting the wildly broad brush, quote, women earn 77 cents on the dollar. And rather than trying to help men land work and higher pay in compensation for all of these problems I've outlined, our government deliberately exacerbates men's deficit. For example, women-owned businesses get special preferences in landing government contracts. Corporations also deliberately exacerbate the unfairness to men. Women, but not men, are encouraged to form committees and caucuses to advance their sex's cause in the workplace, often at men's expense. Examples: mentor programs for women only, special training for women only, fast track to executive positions for women only. And the workplace cultural practices, more often preferred by men, have largely been replaced by approaches more often preferred by women. Individual initiative is now usually deemed inferior to teamwork. Competition has often been replaced by collaboration. Push through to get the job done is being replaced often by process your feelings. Decision-making by leader, often replaced by decision-making by committee. In another example, men are more likely than women to throw all of themselves into work than to demand work-life balance. And what are they? Do they get as a reward for that? They are often dubbed with pathologizing monikers such as workaholic and unable to relax, rather than heroic for being so contributory, even though it costs them their life. Indeed, men die 5.2 years earlier than women, a major cause being stress-related illnesses such as heart attack and stroke. True, the occasional old boy still unfairly promotes a man over a woman. But despite unemployment being higher for men than for women, today, sisters help sisters is not denigrated, yet alone sued as sexist, but encouraged. For example, Madeleine Albright said, quote, "I have always said there is a special place in hell for women who don't help other women," end quote. And such statements have broad impact. For example, I Googled that phrase and found 93,500 references to it. Men's efforts to organize into groups have largely been ridiculed. For example, portraying men's groups as troglodytes tromping into the woods to beat tom-toms. And men's organizations have been pressured to admit women, for example, the service clubs, Rotary, Kiwanis, and Lions, while the long female-only Soroptimists remains that way. Further limiting men's ability to organize, men's groups don't get the enormous free advertising that the media gives to women's groups. More broadly, the media influences how men and women are treated and how boys perceive themselves relative to girls. Whether in the aforementioned commercials, or in sitcoms, or in movies, And even in non-fictional media, men are disproportionately characterized as sleazebags, or doofuses, shown the way by wise women. Don't believe it? Just turn on your TV. And have you not seen Girls Rule t-shirts? How do you think that makes boys feel? And, in perhaps the worst unfairness to men, when women have a deficit, for example, they're, quote, underrepresented in engineering, there has been massive redress. Yet men have the ultimate deficit, the aforementioned, they live 5.2 years shorter. And yet, when I searched PubMed, which indexes 3,000 medical journals for the last 60 years, on the terms women's health and men's health, I found 43 times as many studies using the term women's health as men's. Since 1920, the average lifespan of advantage of women has grown 400%. I need to repeat that. Since 1920, the average lifespan advantage of women has grown 400%. And yet all we hear about is the need to help women's health. While, of course, there's the occasional, that's not in the essay, there's the occasional prostate cancer commercial, but proportionately it's completely out of balance. While, of course, one can point to examples of unfairness to women, it is simply dishonest to assert that today men, on balance, have an unfair advantage. The world is better when both sexes are valued. For every customer-cheating, wife-beating, sexual-harassing guy, there is at least one ethical man working hard to be productive and to support himself and his family. For every manipulative, hormonally crazed, girls-just-want-to-have-fun woman, there is at least one woman diligently striving to have it all, career, family, and a personal life. Good people all, people with real potential to make a better society for all. It is time for a truce, one that is fair to both sexes. Number one, we must end the gender bashing, male or female, in the schools, colleges, and media. For example, statements that Hannah Rosen makes in her Atlantic cover story on Father's Day, such as that men are, quote, women's new ball and chain, end quote, and her other quote, quote, maybe male DNA is shifting. Maybe they're like those frogs. They're more vulnerable or something, so they've gotten deformed, end quote. Two, in addition to ending the gender bashing, it's time to end intentional discrimination against both women and men. To that end, if we are to be honest with ourselves, isn't it time to address these unfairnesses to men that society has ignored or encouraged? Bullet. Only men are allowed to serve in direct combat in the military, and 97.5% of the deaths in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars have been men. Perhaps you find that surprising in light of the media's unrelenting attempt to hide that fact with such phrases as, quote, the men and women who are serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Bullet. Is it not time to end intentional discrimination such as giving women preferences in Small Business Administration female set-aside loans? Is it not time to end intentional discrimination like women, but not men, allowed to have caucuses in corporations and government to facilitate women's advancement? Is it not time to end intentional discrimination of having so many social service programs to help women, almost none for men? Is it not time to end intentional discrimination against men by having, quote, targets, virtual quotas, for women hired and promoted to all levels, but not for men? Is it not time to end the intentional discrimination of having female set-aside scholarships, but not for men? even though there are many more female college students and graduates? Is it not time to end the intentional discrimination against men by having women's networking and other organizations encouraged while men's organizations are attacked as sexist with media-trumpeted demands they be disbanded? Is it not time to end the intentional discrimination against men, that if a man impregnates a woman, even if she falsely claimed to be on birth control, he is stuck with 18 years of financial and parenting responsibility, thereby restricting his work choices? He can't take on a creative career. He's got to sell widgets if he's white collar or repair sewers if he's not. Is it not time to end the discrimination that is the most painful, the aforementioned, when women have the deficit of being underrepresented in science? Massive redress is undertaken, even though a two-decade study reported in the New York Times found that women in academic science fare as well or better on the merits than men. Yet if men have the deficit, even that aforementioned ultimate deficit, they die 5.2 years younger, all we see is an ever-growing sea of pink ribbons or other women's health initiatives. There are 7 federal agencies on women's health, none for men. 39 states have offices of women's health, none for men. As mentioned above, even more unfair, the review of PubMed, which indexes 3,000 medical journals for 60 years, found that the vast majority of gender-specific medical research has been on women's health. Women claim that men's dying younger is because men don't take care of themselves as well. If only they'd see the doctor, they say. Well, would those women say that to African Americans, who also, quote, don't see the doctor, and who smoke and drink at much higher rates than men? And turning to the next generation, the U.S. school system has largely replaced boy-friendly competition with girl-centric collaboration. Boy-friendly adventure stories with soporific to boys tales of girl relationships and history textbooks disproportionately extolling women, from Sacagawea and Pocahontas to Simone de Beauvoir and Sally Ride, while sparing no pages to pound home the evils of white men, from Hannibal to Hitler, Joe McCarthy to Timothy McVeigh. And perhaps worst of all, there is an insistence on ever more seat work, which, when active boys can't endure, are put on a Ritalin leash at a ratio of 8 boys for every 1 girl. 3. To the extent that men could use better communication skills and more collaborative leadership styles to accompany the more goal-oriented individualistic ones, instead of dismissing such men as unable to communicate, let our schools, colleges, and workplaces offer such trainings. 4. It's time for serious men's studies programs at universities that aren't merely parroting the unfairly male-bashing rhetoric of women's studies programs. 5. Is it not appropriate to pay due homage to men who do so many of the dangerous jobs women won't do, from roofer to rodent remover, and invent the aforementioned things that women hadn't invented? Should we not honor the contributions fathers make to parenting? For example, fathers often balance many mothers' tendency to not enforce limits. Fathers often leaven mothers' protective instincts by encouraging reasonable, okay, occasionally not so reasonable, risk-taking. 6. And finally, we appropriately celebrate women having options other than being a stay-at-home mom. Women absolutely deserve the right on the merits to compete for jobs from carpenter to clarinetist to CEO. But we must now legitimate the full range of options for men, from stay-at-home father to 80-hour-a-week scientist. The stay-at-home dad who wants to be a part-time artist should be as respected as much as the woman who chooses that option. The man that chooses to work long hours should not be pathologized as a workaholic, but revered as a hard-working contributor to society. More men than women don't even allow themselves to consider a so-called dream career. Society, often with the encouragement of the woman in his life, makes men feel, even in today's feminist era, that the man must generate most of the family income with a reliable paycheck. So he suppresses his dreams until retirement, by which time he may well be too old or sick. This should be the era of the multi-option man, as well as of the multi-option woman. And yet, ironically, America is making yet more efforts to exacerbate the anti-men sexism. Last year, President Obama created a well-funded Council on Women and Girls, but rejected one on men and boys. And in Obama's April 6th of this year speech at the White House Forum on Women and the Economy, he reiterated that he wants to focus yet more on women. Quote, "I look forward to continuing the important work we are doing to promote the interests of women," end quote. After all, women earn 77 cents on the dollar. America will be better if our goal is merit-based treatment of both men and women. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, this is Work with Marty Nemko. I've tried to do a little innovation here, and tonight when I go home, I'm going to be submitting an essay on to major publications about men at work, and I wanted to get your reactions. Excuse me. Your reactions to this essay, I've had, as to kick this off, I've got my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, here. You've patiently listened to that long essay. I'm curious as to what your reactions are, Barb. First, well, let me give out the phone number first so that people can get in line if they want to comment. The phone number, dear listeners at KALW, any respectful comments, agreements, or disagreements are welcome in response to this essay. About on men at work as on Father's Day. So the phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, Barbara, please go ahead.
Well, obviously I am aware of many of these arguments, and I agree with your conclusions. I don't agree with the tone of the essay, and I would, if I were you, I would rewrite it to change the tone, because I think it has that effect of getting people to want to disagree. The whole opening I found very negative, anti-woman. So while I can agree that I would love to see us stop male bashing, I hate that. Well, I would like us to start honoring our men for the heroes that they are. As I listened to the beginning of the essay, I wanted to back away. So I think you started on the offensive, and I think first the case for some of the male deficits should be made before you start off with all the things that you said in the beginning. When you talked about the 77 cents on the dollar, maybe I missed it, but what's so compelling to me about that is that in the studies that showed women doing that, that figure comes from all jobs men and women do. It's not the same jobs. And in the studies of the same jobs, with the same education, with the same number of hours per week, women actually earn more. That's more compelling to me than just saying that figure is wrong, because it doesn't address why it's wrong.
I did. I said it many times, and I also had links to four studies, so but continue.
Okay. You said that the modern workplace has shifted from get the job done to process your feelings. No, I don't think that the workplace has done that. I think the workplace now includes some recognition of the fact that we're not automatons, we have feelings, but I don't think that we've replaced getting the job done. On the issue of men getting stuck if they have sex with a woman and having to pay for 18 years of supporting the child, even if the woman says she's on birth control, I think that for a very, very long time, women obviously were the ones who were left if they just had sex with the child. It seems like both sexes need to take the responsibility. We're not living in the 1800s where we didn't understand birth control. Condoms are readily available and inexpensive. Any man who is having casual sex and doesn't want to have to pay for the next 18 years ought to have a condom in his wallet, for heaven's sakes, and not be leaving himself vulnerable, as women should be doing the same thing, making sure men have condoms, so that we're not creating children who are throwaway children. I can't tell you how many children we see who are not born into caring, responsible families, and that is a national disgrace. In terms of school, you'll be pleased to know that we are doing much less with fiction and moving much more to nonfiction. So all those puerile stories about bunnies are being replaced with stories about science and history. And we're not doing more seat work. We're doing way less seat work. We're moving towards Common Core, which is all about application of what we're learning. So people doing projects, people creating things. Kids are not sitting in their seats more. They're sitting in their seats less. They're moving around. They're talking. They're doing. They're presenting. So I think that will be real helpful to boys who always had a problem when what they were doing was sitting in their seats doing seat work. It's the opposite. So those are my reactions.
I deliberately don't want to take, because I took so much time reading the essay, I don't want to spend a lot of time responding.
Let's hear from other people.
We will. That's what we're going to do right now. I do want to mention that despite whatever changes you're seeing as a curriculum person, the ratio remains. 8 boys are put on Ritalin for every 1 girl, and there is a tremendous amount of seat work. And, you know, Common Core standards is a new thing for the future, but if you know, certainly today kids are forced to sit. Anyway, I do thank you very much, Barbara. I'm not going to keep you on the line unless you'd like to stay on the line. You're welcome to stay on the line if you'd like. Why don't you stay on the line if you feel like it? I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Are you good with that? All right. All our lines were lighted up instantly as soon as I give out the phone number. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What is your reaction, your feedback for me on this issue about on men at work as we approach this Father's Day? It's you.
Hello, Marty.
Hi.
Yeah, I think the effort to improve women's rights has been a good thing over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think now, it's reversed. I think now it's a social control agenda where men have their rights being stripped and rights have been definitely swayed more to the women's side of things, which keeps men, I think, a little bit more tended to towards a home life, family, kids, overpowering jobs.
What would you say to a woman who says it's only payback time? You guys have been unfair to us. Well, now it's payback time.
I don't think there should be a payback. I think we've progressed far enough that it should be a 50-50 scenario.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, thank you very much for the call. I want to get as many perspectives as I can. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What is your take on the essay on men as we approach the Father's Day regarding the workplace? Hello, it's your turn.
Hi, it's my turn?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. I knew you're going to... thank you so much for all your thoughtful thoughts. I appreciated your wife's comments. I was driving on the freeway. I had to pull over.
Hmm.
I think I'm a 59-year-old woman. I'm a professional creative person. And everybody's going to have these sort of emotional responses, I think, to your very emotional piece. There were many sort of anecdotal things and some things I'm sure you could dig in and supply the facts. But what I'd like to address is the bigger issue that I think that we are so in the middle of an evolutionary change in what gender is, that's an even more important issue, that the things you're talking about are valid, many of them. However, I think the bigger issue is that gender is so switching. How do you define a male or a female? How do you apply that culturally and globally as all of that continues to evolve? So I wish you would address that more and pull back bigger, because I think some of your thinking is too emotional and a little old school, let me put it that way. And I'll just leave on that note.
Do you want to say what you mean by the larger, more important issue? And can you give me an example of where I was emotional rather than factual?
Well, your wife's comments, I think, really, because I was still driving, I couldn't take notes. I think your wife really addressed that. It felt very as if you had a personal agenda. It didn't feel as empirical, perhaps, as I would like. It's not that there's anything wrong with that.
I included study after study, and can you give me an example of where it was emotional rather than factual?
Yes. I think the thing that she noted about men having to give up their lives and have to be a slave to women.
I didn't say that.
That's how it came off.
All right. Then I will thank you for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air.
Oh, Marty, hi. I really like you your advice is sound and everything. And I thought the article was really interesting in terms of the facts you cited. I would suggest, though, that you make a broader issue in terms of women what they're reacting to and why they're so bitter and why they're so hostile, because they're really acting to the excesses of capitalism where man has called the tunes for years, for 70 years, the same 70 years you cite. In the Scandinavian countries where there are greater safety nets for the population, the women have achieved a greater thing without the hostility. So I would take the overall view in the beginning, and then in the end, where you say we should end, I would take a different tack with a more positive tack, where you say we should end gender bashing, we should end preference for women causes. I would put it on a positive note, because I think it's too negative, that we need to have both positive things for men. Men need to now assume different courses and the same kind of courses, just like minorities and women have wanted the same thing. So I would be positive instead of ending that thing. We have enough ending of everything in this country now without the safety nets, and that needs to be emphasized, what a cruel country this has become, and in terms of it's going to get worse. So if you were more positive, I think that's what would be a better idea in terms of putting the article. But it was very interesting. You cited a lot of very good facts, true facts, and facts that can't be disputed. But I would be more positive in that. And I would take the overall viewpoint that it's because of what capitalism has done to the society, untrammeled, unregulated capitalism has done to the society at large, that women are reacting to this.
Okay, I will leave that unquestioned. Let's go right back to the phones. Let's get as many perspectives as we can. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What is your reaction to my essay about men at work, as I'm going to be submitting as an essay on Father's Day? It's your turn on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, it's you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a first grade elementary school teacher here in the Bay Area, and I wanted to comment on what you said about boys and school. And you know, the preponderance of diagnoses of ADD and ADHD amongst boys, I think what your wife was saying, something that, you know, we're doing more activities, there's more movement, there's more of an ability to get away from the typical at your desk, paper and pencil kind of work. And actually, right now in education, the pendulum is swinging back in that direction.
Would you say, when you talk about the ADHD, what percentage are you in a position to assess? What percentage of boys versus girls are disciplined, put on Ritalin, etc., have trouble sitting in
right.
their seats?
You know what? I'll put it to you this way: I've taught first grade now for the last 4 years. I taught second and third prior to that, and in my time in public schools, I've never had a girl in a classroom of mine be diagnosed ADD. It's only been boys. And exactly. I have personally, I mean, I have a lot of empathy for the boys, being a male myself and remembering that age and not fitting in. And it just goes back to the way schools were designed. I mean, my mentor when I entered education was a teacher who had been teaching for over 30 years. And she said to me right away, K through 2 is designed for little girls who want to do well. And that is, I think, an inescapable reality for a lot of boys.
It is. Thanks a lot for the call. I want to try to get as many perspectives as I can. Thank you. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's your reaction to the essay about men at work that I'm planning to submit for Father's Day publication?
Hi, is this me?
Yes, it is.
Yes, sorry. I generally appreciated your article. I felt like it should be broken up into 100 different articles. I think many of the examples you gave where you asked the question whether it was time to end subsidies and benefits and whatnot, I thought half the time I agreed it was, and then half the time I thought it wasn't. And it's more of an empirical breakdown required, because I think quite often in this society, when you study women's health, for instance, that's against a background in which health in general is taken as male health, or men are used in the studies. And when we say people's health, it ends up being men they're talking about by accident still. And so I do worry that if you divert resources from women's health, for instance, you are really removing an emphasis that still needs to be made. In other cases, I agree with you that it's not true. And by the way, I just wanted to comment on ADD also. I'm a sufferer and currently in a class devoted to a better understanding and coping. And they pointed out that girls do suffer ADD probably about as much as boys, but are not diagnosed because they do not act out in class. They tend to manifest the illness by getting dreamy and disappearing into themselves. And teachers especially don't notice them. But it is now thought that ADD is suffered by girls and women, but that their symptoms are not disruptive, so that they're not noticed.
Because this show is supposed to focus on men, I'm going to restrain myself from commenting on the women's health thing, but thank you for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It is your turn on the air. What is your reaction to the essay on men at work as we approach Father's Day? This Father's Day essay I'll be submitting.
Hi, Marty. You're so courageous. I just love it. It's just KLW, and especially your show. You're offering a contrarian, and we need that. In the face of a big Democratic thing, we need Republicans. In the face of the big Republican thing, we need Democrats. Anyway,
I'm not a Republican, by the way. I may point out, but please continue.
Yeah. Anyway, I really appreciate it. I do think you do yourself a disservice a little bit with the rhetoric. I can come back to that. My main point is, I'm a physical scientist and a physical engineer, and my main problem is with we have social science, but social engineering is a bad name. However, that's why we get it wrong. The physical scientists have produced all kind of great stuff, but the social scientists have produced basically really difficulties. And the problem here is compensation. And we have a thing for it in engineering. It's called a proportional integrative differential control box, which is a lot of stuff. But anyway, basically what it does, it subtracts the goal signal from the result signal and puts it back into the amplification. And it's mathy, and it works, and it makes accurate lawn sprinklers. And
can you help me tie this? Can you please tie this to what does it have to do with my essay?
What's happening here in a typical control system thing is an overreaction, a tendency toward compensation for a problem, and then an overreaction, overshoot, and then people come on the other side and want to attack. We haven't gotten many vociferous attackers of you as a basher of women or anything. Thank God we have an intelligent audience. But that would be the tendency to oscillate back and forth. And the physical engineers take that in consideration, and we damp that out. And I would just suggest that we have a little bit more intelligent working out, and that starts with beginning that we are doing social engineering, and we have to think like engineers in order to do that.
Well, thank you for the call. I must admit my essay was an attempt, my attempt was to be non-emotional, to try to present the best arguments I could for why it's indeed men are treated unfairly in today's economy. But what's interesting is there seems to be a double standard. You know, when women expressed their appropriate outrage about unfairnesses to women, they were not in measured tomes in academia. They were burning bras, they were screaming, they were yelling, and that was applauded. And I think compared to that, if you would look at them both, not even just the measured approach, not only in the text, but even how I read it, while there was some mild enthusiasm and even some passion, you know, instead of that being celebrated, it's, you know, both my wife and a couple of the callers suggest that, you know, I'd rather see it not be emotional. I'm not sure that double standard is appropriate. And we don't move people with pure academic tomes. We move people, I think, with an integration of head and heart, the intellect and the emotion. And certainly when our most respected speaker in America, Barack Obama, speaks, he doesn't just cite statistics. He speaks with emotion as well. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. Let's get more perspectives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What is your reaction to my essay about men in work?
Hello, Marty.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the tone of your article was incredibly restrained.
I thought so, too.
We live in a world, you mentioned the Atlantic Monthly article, which mm-hmm. is a national magazine, so-called, for intellectuals, and the title of it, as you mentioned, the cover was The End of Man.
End of Men.
The End of Men.
Yep.
And there was a sidebar article.
Yep.
In that same article, and it was entitled "Are Fathers Necessary?"
Exactly, on Father's Day.
Yes,
exactly.
Now this is such outrageous behavior on the part of a supposedly respectable national publication. Imagine if one had said, "Are women necessary? Are mothers
exactly.
necessary?" Etc. There would be outrage across the country.
And remember, I read from that article. Imagine this in that very cover story. Hannah Rosen, who's the author, wrote, "Quote: Men are women's new ball and chain."
Yeah.
She
yeah.
then writes, "Maybe men." Male DNA is shifting. Maybe they've gotten like those frogs. They're more vulnerable or something, so they've gotten deformed, end quote. So a woman can say that in a national prestigious publication like The Atlantic in a cover story, and I am so measured, and the callers, including my wife, is denigrating me for being too emotional. I am doubting myself because I trust my wife a lot. I trust the KELW listeners.
Well,
what am I not getting?
I honestly don't understand it. I've grown up, obviously, as a male, and I've heard the phrase a male chauvinist pig hundreds of times
mm-hmm.
in the media, et cetera. I've never heard the phrase female chauvinist pig even once.
Or other female, I won't reiterate them, but there's so many critical terms of women that have some basis in truth, just like there's some criticisms of men that have bases in truth, but you can never now hear a man utter these denigrations of women without being excoriated as one step away from a Nazi.
Or as you pointed out, the ads on TV. If anyone wants to check this out, just look at the ads on TV.
Yep, it's unbelievable.
They depict men as being reprobates, taking literally candy from children.
And the news, you know, one could say it's commercials, but if one looks at dramas, if you really look dispassionately, looking only at how genders are portrayed in TV dramas, in respected movies, in nonfiction articles, in prestigious publications, including the New York Times, and you look at how men or women are treated in that, it is shocking, but we digress. I promise people I want to get a maximum number of opinions, so even though yours is supportive of mine, I want to get others, even if they're about to bash me for being too emotional. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's your reaction to my article about men at work? Hello, it's your turn.
Hi, is this me?
It is.
Hi, I'm a woman, and I wanted to corroborate a prior call that I think I have a... First of all, when I was listening to it, I was walking along. I didn't have paper and pen, so I couldn't follow your admonition of noting down specific points. But as I was listening, I was thinking, boy, I would apply a more meta-analysis, which one of the callers did but didn't coin it like that, when he just said that the problem, I think, is the capitalist economic system more than you're discussing the effects of that. Because I think a lot of the specifics around a job choice and largely when you did military, I mean, if we didn't have a military-industrial complex set up by men and men carrying on with wars, we wouldn't have the problem of gender balance in the military, because it is all initiated by guys. And I think a lot of the problems with health care also goes back to capitalism and stressing that, you know, men be in those high-powered positions where they work 60 hours a week. And I will leave it at that, is that I think piecemeal I could have gone through, and I think it was more, people mentioned the tone, and I would, if I were editing it, would more want to say that if you came off positively opening up with that you would like to see more gender balance, and without even, you know, saying, which did sound defensive, maybe it was your tone, that, you know, men die, I'm not remembering the amount because I didn't have the pen and paper.
5.2 years shorter than women.
Yeah,
and, earlier and that 95% women. Of the gender-specific research in the last 60 years has still been related to women. And the reason that
more stressed, which is I get very pleased about when I enter hospitals for medical care, the amount of change there's been over the years in many more men being flight attendants, whereas my dad used to always say it was stewardesses. You don't even hear that word anymore.
Right.
And many more men are nurses in the hospital when they come up to, and I don't know if they're getting discriminated against in that position at all or if there's any pay difference, but I would have broached it as just wanting more equitable within the confines of the society we have right now, which is arguably capitalistic and, you know, male designed. I don't think if there were women at the brunt from the beginning, it would have gone that way, but I could be proved wrong.
I'll thank you for the call. I'm going to opt to get more calls. Let's get more perspectives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco. What's your reaction to my essay on men at work?
Hi, am I on?
You are.
Hey, thank you. I just wanted to say I have to agree with you, Marty. My son, I'm a female in the workforce, and I raised a son who is now entering the workforce. He grew up in a very female-centric educational environment where the classroom practices and requirements were really geared around girls and really neglected boys, and I have noticed this as a theme all along. That said, I recently watched a film which the Ryan Gosling character says, we fought the war of the sexes and we won as soon as women started doing pole dancing as exercise. So the flip side of that is there's a lot of, especially in the way women dress and present themselves these days, there's a lot of pandering to, let me just say, the basest sorts of impulses. And in that sense, I think men are calling the shots. So how can we, from this vast landscape of contradictions, extrapolate and apply the most positive aspects of both and get them work together?
Thank you for the call.
That would be my question.
Thank you. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco. What's your reaction to my essay on men at work?
Marty, Jim from Oakland, and I appreciate your taking feedback. I've never written an article that's gotten that many, opened it up that much, and what I wanted to say is I really responded to your comment about the image of the oaf. I really find it offensive.
Men as oaf as portrayed in the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and pretty worthless and incompetent. I see it in the Mexican media because there's a lot more TV, different stations, and U.S. media. And then having said all that, I think that it's important in some ways not to be reactive to the Atlantic articles. They're very provocative. And I happen to kind of think that there's further discussion about what Barbara brought up and the second woman who spoke on really gender roles are changing. And I really think that needs to be looked at. While I agree the image thing is hurting younger men, I also think that there's a lot more really fertile ground in talking about breaking through from gender roles. And I think younger people in particular are looking for more of a discussion on that. So that's my comment.
Well, I want to comment on that one. There are two separate issues. First of all, there's no question that roles are changing. As I wrote in the very end of the essay, I stressed the fact that this should be the era of the multi-option men and women. So, for example, stay-at-home dads, men with creative careers not being the primary income generators. I made a real point of stressing that. But that doesn't obviate the point that really, if one looks at not the roles, but in terms of the salary data that is so misleadingly presented about for the same work, that women are not paid unfairly relative to men, that men do die much younger, that men do suffer 92% of the workplace deaths, that there are, despite the fact that 60% of the college graduates are women, there are still endless set-asides for women. Despite the fact that the unemployment rate is much higher for men, we have programs to help women in corporate programs and government programs. These are not about gender roles. These are simply about encouraging treatment on the merits, and I don't quite understand why the comments have not focused on the validity of the fairness, but say, oh, we should expand it to a discussion of capitalism and changing women's roles. That seems off topic for an already long and complicated article.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I'm looking at really your audience on the article, I think in large part the audience has to be men. I think some of it has to be men. And you're doing this, speaking back about, hey, this is not right. And I guess I would just say, it's really close for me, but not yet a cigar on the article, because it raises really important points about, hey, I've had enough of this.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got to say, speaking of having enough of it, our time is up, so I have to thank you for the call. Indeed, we've certainly struck a nerve. All the lines are lighted up, and I'm sorry the show is over, so I can't take your calls, but thank you all for your interest. I appreciate it a lot. That is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers, and after winning Star Search, Terry Bradford was Linda Ronstadt's duet partner and Celine Dion's duet partner for 5 years. I know the guy personally. He's very savvy about what you need to do to make a living in the insanely competitive and crazy world of music. He will be my guest on Work with Marty Nemko this coming Sunday. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.